Jesus, what a friend for sinners, Jesus, lover of my soul. Friends,
welcome to the Unknown Bible, the broadcast ministry of Bible Believers Baptist Church in Corpus Christi, Texas. Join us now for today's Bible study with our pastor, Bevins Welder.
Proverbs chapter 6, verses 1 through 5. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 1 through 5. And this one's going to be about being a surety. I mean, to make it simple for you, co-signing notes and going bail. That's what that's about. Being a surety. Let's read it. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 1. My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. Go, humble thyself, and make sure thy friend. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of the fowler. You know, there's some great practical wisdom in these five little verses here. And I don't know if you're already into a situation or not where you have become a co-signer or have agreed to stand good for an obligation or put down a deposit for somebody or something like that. But what he's telling you here is that thing can turn around and bite you. And so he's going to give you some wisdom. If you're already into a deal, he tells you what you need to do about getting out of it. And if you're not in a deal, then he tells you what you need to do to keep from getting into it. Now, look at this passage with me. This proverb is about sureties. And that's what we typically think of as going somebody's bail or co-signing a note with them, something like that. Anytime you give your word on behalf of someone else, you are obligated to pay or make it good if they don't. That's the way it goes. When you co-sign a note, they, in some cases, or guarantee something, they don't even have to go after, in some cases, some agreements, they don't even have to go after the original debtor. They can bypass them, come directly to you, depending on how the agreement's written up. And this proverb here tells you what to do about being a surety. A surety means you're a guarantor, basically. Now, the proverb assumes, the way that it's written, that you have already made a deal to back somebody. And the question is, now that you've done that, what are you going to do about it? Now, while we study that, you need to take a lesson from this wisdom that's in the proverb, because if you listen carefully to what's being discussed here in the text, you can avoid becoming a surety unless you have already agreed in principle that you are completely willing to pay the obligation. In other words, you may want to sign a note for a child, for instance, in lieu of just giving them the money outright in hopes that they can establish some credit. But you're perfectly willing to pay because you are willing to give them the money outright. I mean, you're just trying to help them a little bit. In either case, if they pay the thing and you've co-signed the note, well, then you didn't have to come up with the money and they established a little bit of credit. But in case they don't, you're willing to help them out anyway. So in that particular case, you might not mind. Now, let me just tell you that I've got a lot of experience with these things, having been in the banking business, and there are many times when people guaranteed notes or co-signed notes that they wish they hadn't. And that's what this is about. Now, let's look down through the passage very carefully and see how to apply everything that's here. All right? Verse 1. My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger. Now, in this particular passage, you could have made the deal by just shaking on it. They don't do that much anymore. But, you know, the old saying was, you're as good as your word. And many a deal was made on a handshake that was never written down in the form of a formal agreement. Today, it's really strange. If you're going to do a loan transaction that involves any kind of collateral, there's going to be a lot of documentation, lots of paperwork. And a lot of that has arisen because men didn't want to pay. They hired lawyers that found technical ways to get them out of their obligations. The banks and the credit companies got smarter, and they came up with more sophisticated documents, and the lawyers that didn't want you to pay came up with more sophisticated ways out. And what's happened is they've built a paperwork monstrosity. This says you could have made a deal by just shaking on it. And truthfully, your word ought to be so good that you can give somebody your hand on a deal and make it good, whether it's written down or not. They may never remember. You ought to remember. That's the way it was in the old days, and that's something about the old days that's better than the current days. And this text here shows you you could make that deal with a stranger, not just with a friend. He said in verse 1, if thou be surety for thy friend, that's one case, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger. You could make it with a stranger or a friend. It wouldn't make any difference. You're now obligated just by giving your word that you would help the guy out. Now notice in verse 2, he goes on to say, thou art snared. Notice that. Thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. The word you give becomes a snare that takes you. We used to have a phrase, and I think they still do. They took him at his word. They took him. You see that? They took him at his word. It's a snare that takes you. It becomes a trap or a snare that can be pulled at any time. Now remember, the cartoonish way of illustrating the snare was to have a tree that was leaned over. It was tender enough to lean over. And then it had a rope attached to it. And then staked down on the ground was a snare and a little release so that when you step into the snare, it releases, grabs you by the ankle, and throws you up that tree and hangs you there until somebody comes by to release you. Well, that's the way a guarantee is, or a co-signing is, or going bail is. Once you have signed on the dotted line or given your word that you will make the thing good, you're obligated. If the other person doesn't pay, they're going to come looking to you to pay. That's the way it works. I had a friend of mine that was talking to me not too long ago, and he had co-signed a note for one of his sons, and some of the deal had been rearranged and all that, and he wondered if he had to make the thing good. Well, I'll tell you what, man, that thing will make you lay awake at night. You just think you're putting your name on the paper in order to add a little strength to convince the lender to loan the borrower some money, not realizing they may come after you one day. Boom, now you're in a trap. All right, now that you realize this, look at verse 3. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. Go, humble thyself, and make sure thy friend. All right, now that you realize this, you have two options. One, you need to deliver yourself and get out of the bond, if you can. Look what he says. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. All right, now, some examples of easy ways to get out of it. Let's say you are a guarantor on a note in a company with other partners, and then you leave the company. Well, when you leave the company, cut yourself out of the deal as a guarantor, because you're not sure that your former partners are going to perform as well as they did when you were there. And to keep you from getting stuck later, you want to make sure that you get your name off that piece of paper if you can. That's what he said. Do this now, my son. Deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. If there's any possible way at all for you to get out of the deal, then you need to get out of it. Now, in some cases, you're not going to be able to do that. If you went in with the borrower to a lender and you put your name down there on the piece of paper and the lender is still concerned about the borrower's ability to pay, they're not going to let you out of the deal. You're stuck. But if there's any possible way for you to get out of it, you ought to get out of it. Go back and check the guy out. Make sure that everything is legitimate. Go, humble thyself. Make sure thy friend, like one guy said, make sure that he's really your friend so that he won't use this agreement to get you to mess up. Now, when I read this, what he says, go humble thyself and make sure thy friend, you know, I don't just get the idea that you're going to make sure the guy's really your friend so that you don't get stuck with the deal. Not real sure on that one. I'll tell you what it looks more like. What it looks more like is that if you want to keep that friend, get out of this deal. In other words, while you have agreed to back him, before there's any obligation on your part to pay, if you get off of that piece of paper and he doesn't pay, there's a good possibility that your friendship is going to survive that deal because once you pay on his behalf and he doesn't pay you, that friendship is busted forever. But it's possible if you're not obligated with him and he still doesn't make it, he can still be your friend because you're not after him for jilting you. That's what it's going to feel like. You lose your friend over the deal. And sometimes a friendship is a lot more important than a financial arrangement. It's better just to let the thing go. Now, you know, a lot of times you can't get out of these deals because other people were depending upon you being there to make the contract. So I'm warning you, if you haven't gotten into one of these but you're thinking about it, or if you're ever approached about one in the future, don't go there. Just don't do it. Look at verse 4. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. In other words, realize that this business is so urgent and requires so much haste that it becomes the priority of your attention. In other words, don't sleep on it. Because what will happen is you'll let something else come up and become a priority, and before you know it, the convenient time you had will have passed, and you'll be shelling out money. So you got to be careful. He said, if you realize now you're into something, get out of the deal. Fold the deal if need be to keep from having to make good on it later. And then he says in verse 5, deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter and as a bird from the hand of the fowler. In other words, you should want to run out of this trap so desperately that you'd be like a wild animal that had a chance to get out of a cage. You'd just boogie. I remember years ago, we were horseback riding and found a fawn that separated from its doe. I think what happened, obviously, is that we spooked it when we were riding through there, and that fawn tried to run from us, and we thought it'd be great to raise that fawn, so we captured it, and I rode back with it across my saddle, and then we took it up to the ranch and put it in a harness, not a collar around his neck, but a harness that went underneath the front shoulders and around the chest and around the neck that way so it wouldn't, you know, when he was fighting it wouldn't put so much pressure around his neck. And we had him on a leash. We kind of walk him around. And about 3 days into that deal, he pulled out of that harness and we thought, uh-oh, he's gone. But we'd already fed him several bottles and other things. And so he wasn't going to leave. He just didn't want to be in that harness anymore. He wanted to be around us, but he didn't want to be in the harness. And likewise, you'd still want to be around your friend, but you don't want to be harnessed up together. And honestly, if you want to keep your friendships that you have, then you avoid these deals that trap you. All right, now, in the book of Proverbs, there are a few more Proverbs that really drive this point home, so let's go over to them. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 11 at verse 15. Proverbs chapter 11, let's look at verse 15. And look what it says in Proverbs 11:15. He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth suretyship is sure. You see how that thing where he says, make sure thy friend? If you want to make sure that friendship is going to survive, don't get into the deal in the first place. You see? Make sure the friendship is going to survive. Now, he told you in no uncertain terms, in Proverbs chapter 11, verse 15, he that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it. It's going to cost you. You can be sure of that. And if you're not willing to have that thing come back and bite you, then don't get into the deal. Now, being in the ministry, from time to time, we're approached over the years by people that have a need. And oftentimes, they'll come and want to, quote, borrow some money to help them out. Well, I made a practice a long time ago because I realized what was going on. If I were to loan them the money and they didn't pay me, then that was going to be the end of our relationship because they'd be too embarrassed to hang around the church. So I just made a rule for myself. If I wasn't willing to give them the money outright, then I wasn't going to do it at all. And if I was willing to give them the money in order to try to be a help to them, then I was not going to ask them to pay it back. I wasn't going to make it a loan arrangement. And I'm not a sponge. I mean, I'm not sitting here where people can just come pluck the fruit off the vine. There have been some very legitimate needs and some times when the Lord has wanted us to help that we've been able to do that. But I don't make it out like a loan. But there it is. I forget about it. In two instances that I can remember, somebody has come back and actually repaid what I gave them. Actually, three instances now that I think about it, has actually paid what I gave them when they were in a position to be able to do it. And I was so impressed, I just didn't keep the money. I gave it to missions. I was just flabbergasted because 90% of the time it doesn't happen. And what Solomon said is actually absolutely right. If you're going to be trying to be surety for a stranger, it's going to cost you. He said, just better off not to do anything at all than to get into that kind of situation. Now look in Proverbs chapter 17, verse 18. And the reason I was being a little bit hesitant telling you about these arrangements is not looking for anybody to be calling and saying, hey, give me some money. I'm trying to tell you for your benefit. When somebody comes to you and you see there's a legitimate need and you want to try to help them, in your own mind, you'll be better off if you can just give them the money. And if they come back and repay you, great, glory to God. Put it back in your pocket, give it to the Lord, do whatever you want to do with it. But don't put them under a contractual loan arrangement. It's just going to really screw up your friendship. And you don't want to lose a friend, not a good one. They're hard to find. All right, in Proverbs chapter 17, verse 18, a man void of understanding striketh hands and becometh surety in the presence of his friend. You know what he's saying to you here? If you're willing to shake hands on a deal and stand up for a guy, you're void of understanding. You're void of understanding. I mean, you don't realize. You're probably going back in your mind right now and thinking about some relationships that you had with some people that got terribly busted up over a thing just like this, and you do realize. But if you haven't realized yet, he's saying you don't understand. There are very, very few cases where you ought to put yourself in as a surety. Look in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 16. Proverbs chapter 20, look at verse 16. Take his garment that is surety for a stranger, and take a pledge of him for a strange woman. All right? What that is this. A stranger comes to you and wants to borrow some money. You don't know the guy. But he brings a friend of yours with him. And the friend says, look, I'll stand good for him. Then you know what Solomon says? Take collateral. In this case, take his garment. That way you know that the guy will come back and pay you, and you know you have a way of being repaid from your friend, and you know that your friend is going, if you take his garment, is going to maintain a viable interest in this stranger paying you back. But he said, get some collateral. Make sure that you'll get paid back. And then Proverbs chapter 22, verse 26. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 26. Be not thou one of them that strike hands or of them that are sureties for debts. There's your cosigner. There's your guarantor right there. He said, don't do it. Be not thou one of them that strike hands or of them that are sureties for debts. He said, don't do it. Don't do it. Why? It'll cost you. It'll cost you more down the road than it would have if you'd have just left the thing alone. It is easier to say no now than to try to collect from a friend later once he's gone in trouble. It hurts a lot worse then than it does just to say no now. Just make it a practice. Make it a policy that you're not going to do it. Now, I understand that there are cases when you will need to stand for your friend. There are. They're in the Bible. There are times when you're going to want to do a thing, you're going to know it's the right thing to do, and you are fully prepared to fork over the cash. But you're sure going to have to be careful that you know exactly the situation. Let me give you a few cases from the Bible. Look in Genesis chapter 43. Genesis chapter 43. All right? This is a rare occasion, but this is Judah talking to his father because they are now out of food in the second year of famine. They've got to go back to Egypt where Joseph is and get some more food. And Joseph has demanded that Benjamin come with his brothers, and literally Jacob is scared to death that something bad's going to happen to Benjamin. And look what Judah says in Genesis 43:8. Judah said unto Israel his father, "Send the lad with me," that's Benjamin, "and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and thou, and also our little ones. I will be surety for him. Of my hand shalt thou require him. If I bring him not unto thee, and set him before thee, then let me bear the blame forever, for except we had lingered, surely now we had returned this second time." All right, so they go over there, and you know the rest of the story if you've read the book of Genesis. And in Genesis chapter 44, Joseph says, "I want to keep Benjamin here." And boy, I'm telling you, everybody is really upset about that because they know what's going to happen to Jacob if they come home without Benjamin. So in Genesis 44, verse 30, look what Judah says to Joseph. "Now therefore, when I come to thy servant, my father, and the lad be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life, it shall come to pass when he seeth that the lad is not with us, that he will die. And thy servants shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant," that is, thy servants, that's Judah and the boys, "will bring down the gray hairs of thy servant Jacob, our father, with sorrow to the grave. For thy servant," that is Jacob, became surety for the lad unto my father, saying, "If I bring him not unto thee, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. Now therefore, I pray thee, let thy servant abide instead of the lad, a bondman to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brethren. For how shall I go up to my father, and the lad be not with me, lest peradventure I see the evil that shall come on my father?" What's he saying there? Well, this is what he's saying. He's saying, he doesn't know it's Joseph at the time, but he's saying, "Joseph, you wanted to keep Benjamin, but my dad will never have it. He'll die if he doesn't see him come back with the boys. So let Benjamin go, and I will take his position. I will be your slave in his place." Well, that was a great thing for him to do because he'd made an arrangement with his father. They needed food, and if Benjamin hadn't gone with them, there is no way in the world they would have anything to eat. And he wasn't going to let the loss of Benjamin kill his father, because that would have been worse for his father than the lack of food. So he became surety for Benjamin, and he said, "If something goes wrong, I'll bear the blame." And knowing what had gone wrong and that they wanted to keep Benjamin there as a slave, Judah said, "The easiest thing for me to do is I'll be the slave. Let him go. At least we won't starve to death, and at least my father won't die when he won't show up." Very appropriate suretyship. Paul was surety for Onesimus. Look in Philemon at verses 18 and 19. Philemon. Paul was surety for him. Now, Philemon was a man that was a good friend of Paul's, and Philemon had a servant named Onesimus, and Onesimus ran off. And when he did, Paul was able to lead him to the Lord. And Paul wrote back to Philemon to tell him that Onesimus had gotten saved, that his life was changed, and he was even thinking about sending him back there. And he told Philemon in verse 18, "If he hath wronged thee or oweth thee aught, put that on mine account." Paul said, "Don't charge Onesimus. He's a new man now. Let me pay it. I, Paul, have written it with mine own hand. I will repay it, albeit I do not say to thee how thou owest unto me, even thine own self besides." Paul was very clever. He didn't want Onesimus to have to pay it. No telling how long Onesimus would have to work through an arrangement with Philemon to repay an indebtedness that he had with him. Paul just said, "I'll take care of it." But then he played a trump card with Philemon. He said, "You know, you owe me your own life." In other words, evidently Paul had led Philemon to the Lord, and he's saying, "You know, that ought to be worth something." In other words, if Onesimus owes you anything, charge it to my account. But since you already are indebted to me, let's just call it a wash. Good time to be a surety. for a brand new convert in Christ like that to stand in there and help him through a situation like that. And then finally, in Hebrews chapter 7, verse 22, we find that Jesus Christ was surety for us. Hebrews chapter 7, verse 22, by so much was Jesus made a surety of a better testament. In other words, God demanded that our indebtedness be paid, and Jesus said, I'll pay it. He paid a debt I could not pay. I owed a debt I could not pay. He paid a debt he did not owe. And Jesus just stood in for us. Why? Because he bought our souls. And where those souls were on the line, there was an absolute necessity for Jesus Christ to stand in there because there was no way we could do it for ourselves. So what you've learned today then from Proverbs chapter 6 verses 1 through 5 is that in financial arrangements, you're better off not co-signing or guaranteeing or going somebody's bail, because if they fly the coop, you're going to get stuck in whatever friendship you had with them before. You're going to lose. That's the simple statement there. And only in rare cases where you are already ready to fork over the money anyway, in which case you ought to just give them the money and forget the loan transaction. Or if you're going to do something for a child and try to help them get a little credit established, give them a chance to get out there. That may be good in that case because you're willing to give it to them anyway, but you're probably doing them a favor if they get a little bit of credit established. And frankly, I'll tell you something. People have way too much credit, and it's way too easy to get anyhow. You're better off teaching them how to live within their means without having to borrow the money in the first place, if they can. Much better deal. So you've had a very practical lesson here in life, and something hopefully that will save you a lot of heartache and a lot of money down the road, and clearly define for you those specific instances when it really is good for you to stand in for somebody, like instances where Paul did for Onesimus, and like Judah did for Benjamin, and like Jesus Christ did for us. Amen? Hopefully this lesson will do you lots and lots of good. I know if I'd have learned this one a long time ago, it sure would have helped me. Amen.
You have been listening to The Unknown Bible, the radio ministry of Bible Believers Baptist Church in Corpus Christi, Texas. For information about our church, go to our church website at www.my3bc.com. That's my3bc.com. If you would like to contact us by telephone, our number is 361-241-6100. Bible Believers Baptist Church is a Bible-believing church located at 1701 Rand Morgan Road. If you are not currently a member of a Bible-believing church and you are looking for a church with an uncompromising stand on the words of God, come visit with us this Sunday or Wednesday. We would love to see you.
Hallelujah.